And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and we're going to get off into some animal news here. The Idaho Supreme Court last week ruled that the wilderness designations imply a federal reserved water right that protects all unreserved water from diversion and development. Because removing water unnecessarily impairs the natural state of wilderness lands, Congress must have intended to reserve all unappropriated water, wrote Justice Kathy Sillack in the opinion. According to the court, the wilderness water right is established upon the date that the area was designated as wilderness and protects all water flowing in to the wilderness area. Upstream of the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness, the largest designated wilderness in the lower 48 states, proposed mining and water diversion projects could be halted by the ruling. The ruling, which is an important confirmation of the value of water in wilderness, will not affect water rights established prior to the designation of the wilderness areas. People are opposed to more wilderness want to use this to fight over water rights to kill any future wilderness designation, said Laird Lucas, attorney for the Idaho Conservation League and the Wilderness Society. The people who are saying this decision will shut down current water uses are flat wrong. In news from North Carolina, the North Carolina State Agency has asserted authority over chip mills. The Environmental Management Commission of North Carolina has upheld the authority of the Department of Environment and Natural Resources to require individual permits for chip mills, according to the North Carolina Sierra Club. The Dogwood Alliance and the Sierra Club intervened on behalf of the state. The groups wanted to ensure that the permitting process involves more scrutiny, allows the state to consider secondary impacts, and gives the public a chance to comment and can result in on-site specific permit conditions. And a lawsuit brought by the Earth Justice Legal Defense Fund for Northwest Ecosystem Alliance, Clark County Natural Resources Council, the Northwest Environmental Defense Center, and the Washington State Environmental Council has ended with a legal settlement requiring the National Marine and Fisheries Service to develop a rule to protect threatened steelhead in the Northwest. National Marine Fisheries Service must produce a draft plan by December 15th of this year and a final plan by June of next year for steelhead from California to Washington and inland to Idaho. The Center for Biological Diversity and a coalition of 10 conservation groups and fishing groups has officially notified the National Marine Fisheries Service of their intent to sue the agency for refusing to include most of the Southern California from the protected range of the endangered steelhead trout. Bowing to political pressure, the Fisheries Service unlawfully excluded all streams south of Malibu Creek, which is near Los Angeles, and all stream reaches above impassable dams. The ruling was designed to avoid conflicts with the military, developers, and dam builders rather than protect steelhead. The agency's own internal documents show that steelhead formerly occupied coastal streams south to Mexico and that important habitat exists above many Southern California dams. These dams must be removed to restore the coastal rivers, beaches, and wildlife of Southern California. Over 100,000 steelhead trout once inhabited the streams south of San Luis Obispo County. Fewer than 400 remain. The importance of protecting steelhead streams upstream of dams and south of Malibu Creek has been dramatized by the discovery of steelhead this year in San Mateo Creek in San Diego County. These were well within the agency's identified zone of extinction, and public pressure is mounting, meanwhile, to remove the Mataliha Dam in order to restore beaches and trout habitats. And in a move that bodes ominous for the Mexican Wolf Recovery Program, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has maneuvered the head of the recovery team out of his job. Following standard agency cost-cutting procedures, Dave Parsons joined the Federal Early Retirement Program and then reapplied for a short-term position, continuing to direct the recovery program with the understanding that he would be hired back immediately. Though he was the only person to apply for the job, however, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service refused to rehire him. In a Fish and Wildlife Service region notorious for allowing cattle, logging, and real estate, power industries, and others to run rampant over endangered species, Parsons consistently sought to insulate the Wolf Recovery Program from political pressures. It may have cost him his job. The timing was particularly poor for this coup. U.S. Fish and Wildlife officials were in the process of deciding whether to put wolves directly into the Gila Wilderness, where they will be better protected from poachers and the livestock industry. The Center for Biological Diversity has developed a Wolf Safe Haven plan, which calls for the reintroduction of wolves directly into the Gila Aldo Leopold Wilderness Complex And you can look at that plan at the following website address, southwest-center.org/swcbd/activist/wolfhaven.html. That website again is www.sw-center.org/swcbd/activist/wolfhaven.html. And if you'd like to make a comment about the firing of Dave Parsons, actually the non-hiring of Dave Parsons and reintroduction of wolves into the Gila, contact Jamie_Clark. That's Jamie_Clark at fws.gov. That's Jamie_Clark at fws.gov. Federal dam managers have failed this year to meet salmon recovery goals required by the Federal Endangered Species Act in the Snake and Columbia River basins, the environmental group American Rivers said. The group released a 1999 report card for the Northwestern managers examining water quantity and water temperature goals for salmon recovery. All stocks of the Snake River salmon and steelhead are listed under the Endangered Species Act. Once again, dam managers failed to meet the most basic standards for salmon recovery, said Justin Hayes, Associate Director of Public Policy for American Rivers. Dam managers must meet ESA requirements established by the National Marine Fisheries Service for rivers that host endangered fish. And their grades are so poor, it's time for a parent-teacher conference, said Hayes, who urged President Bill Clinton to uphold federal salmon recovery criteria. And if you'd like to view the report card, you can do so online. Go to www.amrivers.org/snakereportcard99. That webpage again, www.amrivers.org/snakereportcard99. And wild Atlantic salmon are in danger of extinction despite intensive efforts to ensure their survival, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced last Friday. The agency's joint biological review document changes in the status of the of wild Atlantic salmon in Maine waterways from the Kennebec River Basin to the St. Croix near the Canadian border. The report concludes that fewer adult salmon are returning to spawn and young salmon in rivers are surviving at lower rates than expected. The prospects for these salmon are poor unless greater protections can be put in place, the report notes. These include controls on water diversions to ensure flow to the rivers, restrictions on recreational fishermen who catch wild salmon, and safeguards at fish farms. And biologists from state, regional, and federal natural resource agencies will be sampling for an invasive fish, the round goby, in the Illinois waterway system next week. Researchers, that was this week, by the way. Researchers hope to learn just how far this species has spread inland from the Great Lakes. The round goby, native to the Black and Caspian Seas, was first discovered in North America waters in 1990 and has since spread to all of the Great Lakes. This bottom-feeding species is known for its aggressive feeding and defensive behavior, and despite its small size, ranging from 3 to 6 inches, its rapid reproduction rate and aggressive behavior threaten populations of native fish. And in news from Idaho, after a public meeting with hunters, ranchers, and conservation groups, the Idaho Fish and Game Commission announced it would change a controversial policy to radically reduce predators in the state. According to an October 1st Fund for Animals newsletter, the commission had proposed to kill predators to increase game populations and passed a resolution to severely and demonstrably reduce the number of predators adversely affecting or that may adversely affect big game, upland game birds, fish, and migratory waterfowl. Some hunters were proposing to kill 50% of red-tailed hawks to recover sage-grouse. Others blamed wolves, and still others called for a bounty on mountain lions and bears. However, citing excessive cost and public outrage, the commission repealed its resolution. The commission will now deal with excessive predation on a case-by-case basis. Environmental groups, animal rights activists, and several hunting groups spoke against the resolution, and the commission received 120 letters from concerned citizens against the predator policy. From Spain, the Spanish Environmental Ministry and autonomous regional governments signed a strategic plan recently for the conservation of Spain's wetland areas, amongst them some of Europe's most important wildlife habitats, such as the Doñana National Park and Ebro Delta. Located in Andalusia in southern Spain, Doñana National Park occupies the right bank of the Guadalquivir River at its estuary on the Atlantic Ocean. Its great diversity of lagoons, marshlands, fixed and mobile dunes, and scrub woodlands is home to 5 threatened bird species, a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. It is one of the biggest heron rookeries in the Mediterranean region and a wintering site for more than 500,000 waterfowl each year. The park was flooded with acid mine waste in April of 1998 when a tailings dam broke at a Canadian-controlled Boliden mine. The mouth of the Ebro River on the Mediterranean coast of Spain, about midway between Barcelona and Valencia, has experienced years of deforestation with accelerated formation of the delta. In this century, many dams were built on the Ebro River and its tributaries, as the river's sediment load has been retained below the dams instead of flowing naturally to the sea. Erosion is now dominating the Ebro Delta coast. Presenting the Conservation Plan Environment, Minister Isabel Tocino described it as the first initiative to stem Spain's national biodiversity strategy. All right, that sounds good. And from Manila in the Philippines, the vanishing damselflies and dragonflies in the Philippines, considered by ecologists to be nature's best predator of disease-bearing mosquitoes, are stronger by one with the discovery of a new damselfly species. The insect, never before seen by scientists and totally unknown to the world of science, was discovered clinging to life in a rainforest threatened by logging in Cebu, an island province of the Philippines. The new damselfly, temporarily tagged Cebu resinimus, was discovered by the Tabunan Forest by Tabaldo Borromeo, a Filipino entomologist and lepidopterist who works as a research aide with the German-based Schenkenberg Museum. He is also known for having identified as many as 50 butterflies in Cebu. Damselflies and dragonflies of the order Odonta are considered the most important predators of mosquitoes, including some of the most dangerous ones, such as the Aedes aegypti, which spreads dengue fever, and the Anopheles mosquito, which is responsible for malaria. From Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, we read that for every 8 bird species in the air today, one will likely be extinct by the year 2100. An authoritative international bird conservation group predicted, and in their new report released by BirdLife International, shows that 1,200 bird species, about 1 in 8 or 12% of the world's birds, have a real risk of becoming extinct in the next 100 years. Another 600 to 900 species are close to being added to the threatened list. Moving back to the U.S., the U.S. House of Representatives has passed legislation aimed at so-called crush videos, in which live animals are crushed and killed by women in high-heeled shoes. The bill, which passed on a 372-42 vote, prohibits entering a depiction of animal cruelty into interstate commerce for the purpose of commercial gain. The bill's sponsor, Representative Elton Gallagher, a California Republican, became aware of the videos when prosecutors in his home district had difficulty charging crush video producers under anti-cruelty laws. Prosecutors had to prove that the acts in the videos occurred within the statute of limitations for animal abuse. Without date stamps or other evidence, it was difficult to establish when the videos were made. Animal protection groups applauded the legislation and encouraged legislators to pass the bill swiftly. It is gratifying that our Congress has acknowledged the serious nature of this offense against animals and has, with dispatch, dealt a serious blow to this abominable industry, said Holly Hazard, executive director of the Washington, D.C.-based Doris Day Animal League. Actress Loretta Swit testified in support of the bill, saying, "When we are silent or look the other way when a living being is violated or cruelly exterminated, we send a message that it is acceptable. It is not." The bill excludes videos or other depictions with journalistic, religious, political, educational, historical, or artistic value. If passed, individuals prosecuted under the statute could face up to 5 years in prison in addition to fines. An endangered North Atlantic right whale has died after becoming entangled in fishing gear earlier this year. The adult female whale, known to researchers as number 2030, was spotted in May off the Massachusetts coast entangled in netting. Rescue efforts could not begin until she was spotted again this September in the Bay of Fundy. Number 2030 and two other female right whales were tangled in gillnet gear used by commercial fishermen to catch cod, mackerel, and other schooling fish. Efforts to disentangle 2030 succeeded in removing two of the three wraps of gear, but the third embedded wrap proved fatal. Number 2020 Number 2030 was reported dead, floating near Cape May, New Jersey on Wednesday. The fishing gear was embedded across her back, almost cutting into her body cavity, exposed her right shoulder blade, and almost sliced through her right flipper. Researchers will perform an autopsy over the next few days. The whale's exact age is unknown, and she has never been seen with a calf. Losing a female right whale of reproductive age is a setback to the remaining population of 290 to 320 whales. However, human activities account for 40% of all known right whale deaths. And in response to a lawsuit filed by the Center for Biological Diversity, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, has listed three southwestern species under the Endangered Species Act. On October 20th, the agency listed the Devil's River Minnow as threatened in Texas and Mexico, the Pecos Sunflower as threatened in Texas and New Mexico, and the Deseret Milk Vetch as threatened in Utah. The Pecos Sunflower is dependent on desert wetlands. It is known from 22 sites in Cibola, Valencia, Guadalupe, and Chavez counties, New Mexico, and from three sites in the Pecos and Reeves County in Texas. It is threatened by wetland fillings and drainings, overgrazing, and invasive exotic species. The Deseret Milk Vetch was considered extinct until its rediscovery in 1981. It exists in one small population in Utah County, Utah, threatened by urban sprawl, overgrazing, and highway construction. The Devil's River Minnow is a small fish known from only three locations in the Val Verde and Kinney counties of Texas and one drainage in Cahuilla, Mexico. Its range has been significantly reduced and fragmented due to dam construction and spring dewatering. Once one of the most abundant fish in the Devil's River, the minnow is now one of the rarest. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service finalized new guidelines today for assigning priorities for listing endangered and threatened species under the Endangered Species Act for fiscal years 1999 and 2000. This guidance allows the Fish and Wildlife Service to allocate funds and resources to the species that are in the greatest need of protection. This new guidance will help us set priorities that are addressing the needs of those species that are most imperiled first. In an effort to continue to address the needs of species facing the greatest threats, the new priority guidance establishes the following priorities for listing endangered species. Priority 1 are emergency listings for species facing a significant risk to their well-being. Priority 2 are final decisions on pending proposed listings. And Priority 3, determining whether candidate species should be listed. And Priority 4, findings on petitions to add species to the list and petitions to delist or reclassify species. Critical habitat actions, such as determining whether it is prudent to designate critical habitat, proposing a designated critical habitat, and making final designations of critical habitat, will no longer fall under this guidance. The service expects to complete a number of critical habitat actions during fiscal year 2000, which will be funded separately from other listing actions. And in news about Home Depot, Rainforest Action, Greenpeace, and Forest Action Network had a conference call with Home Depot on Thursday, October 12th, in which they were given an outline of their new policy while discussing a process to fill in all of the details. When the campaign against Home Depot was in full swing, Rainforest Action Network issued five demands of Home Depot: that it commit to eliminate its egregious supply, phase in independently certified sustainably harvested wood, increase purchases and sales of tree-free alternatives, promote greater wood use efficiency, and fully train all employees and purchasing staff to ensure implementation. Yesterday, Home Depot told us that its new policy will have those five elements, which follow almost exactly the ones listed above. So maybe those 500 demonstrations and 250,000 letters had an impact after all. The most critical part of this plan is, of course, the objective to phase out its bad wood. Here's the important part and where we have unfinished work to do. We learned that in their plan, that their plan is comprehensive, that includes all species and all regions that can be identified as being endangered, presumably at least areas such as British Columbia, the Amazon, Southeast Asia, perhaps Alaska, and elsewhere. Home Depot will begin but not limit its work to three particularly impactful wood products: cedar, luan, and redwood. The plan of action for these species and all species from endangered forests is to identify the wood products, Luan plywood, for example, and get rid of it, either by simply eliminating the product altogether or, more likely, to find an alternative wood substitute. Needless to say, a complete elimination of all Luan and Western Red Cedar wood products will have an unprecedented effect on logging companies operating in these primary forests. This work will start immediately, and the goal for Home Depot is to have it finished by the end of the year 2002. And, of course, that's the good news. The bad news, well, we have to wait till 2002, okay? And from Colorado, America has gained its first new national park in 5 years as President Clinton signed a bill creating the Black Canyon of the Gunnison National Park in Colorado. The centerpiece of the 30,000-acre park is a narrow canyon up to 2,900 feet deep and 40 feet wide at its narrowest point. It is called Black Canyon because sunlight reaches the canyon floor for only about an hour a day, said Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell, a Republican from Colorado, a prime park proponent. The canyon, about 250 miles southwest of Denver, became a national monument in 1933. It is renowned for trout fishing in the Gunnison River, rock climbing on the sheer canyon walls, and hiking in the surrounded areas. Clinton, in a statement, said it was a true national treasure. This bipartisan bill demonstrates once again that preserving our environment for future generations is a cause that transcends party lines, Clinton said. Black Canyon is the first new national park since the creation in 1994 of Joshua Tree and Death Valley Parks in California. And the last pieces of Edwards Dam have been removed from the Kennebec River in Maine less than 4 months after the dam was first breached. This is a milestone for the environment and river communities everywhere, said Laura Day of the Kennebec Coalition, a group formed in 1989 with the goal of removing the dam. The coalition includes American Rivers, the Atlantic Salmon Federation, the National Resources Council of Maine, and Trout Unlimited. The fact that the Edwards Dam removal project was completed in a timely and cost-effective manner is solid proof that dam removal works to restore a river, and such projects are within reach for communities. Unfortunately, that's it for the news tonight. To get news announcements and comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, please send us email at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send your letters, donations, CDs, cassettes, or anything friendly to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance so Uncle Dennis can get them on the air in a timely manner. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Earth First Radio is broadcast live on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM every Thursday evening at 8 p.m., or you can listen to Earth First Radio anytime on your computer. We're on the World Wide Web at radioforall.web.net. That's http://radioforall4 in the middle there, radioforall.web.net. You'll need a sound card on your computer, but the software you need is free for downloading at the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. If you found us on the web, please ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. Well, I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening and encourage you to please tune in again. In the meantime, we're going to head on out into the ozone with a little music here. Once again, Daryl Cherney off his cassette tape called Timber, and this one's called The Rio Grande.
I was born south of the border, but I could not find a job. I swam across the Rio Grande, I paid $1,000 to the mob. I traveled up to Mendocino, where I found work in forestry. They paid me $7 an hour, pulling green chain for LP. But now LP, they moved to Mexico. Them kill the Russian River and a couple friends of mine as well. I work 6 10-hour shifts a week, so where's my pad on the back? If I wanna keep on milling redwoods, I better learn some Spanish jack, because there'll be a move to Mexico.